Hello and welcome to episode 19 of Engaging Internal Comms. This is the show for employee engagers and internal communicators who like to keep up to date with all that is new in our profession. My name's Craig Smith from The Big Picture People. Okay, so we're up to episode 19 now of the show. I can't believe how the previous months have flown by. I never thought we'd get to this far so quickly. It's come around really quickly. We are now starting to think about the second series. I've mentioned this in a couple of episodes. Each week, my thinking gets a little bit clearer about what we're going to be doing. We may well run this first series a little bit longer than I'd originally thought, maybe up to 25 or 30 episodes, because what I'm looking to do in season two is a slightly different format where we will maybe have a alternate with interview shows 1 week, and then maybe something where we do a little bit of a deeper dive, possible with multiple contributions from different interviewees on the same show about a particular topic. That just makes things a little bit more complicated for us. It's as some of you know, well, many of you know me, will know that the podcast isn't my day job. My day job is quite different with The Big Picture People. The podcast is something that I do because I love it and I really enjoy it, and I love speaking to amazing people who we've had as interviewees and as contributors so far, and I really enjoy talking about the topics that we've had. So I'm trying to keep it as low maintenance as possible, being honest with you, but I do want to try and mix up a little bit and make it a little bit more a bit different, a bit more variety. So that's my plan is. We are running a survey at the moment, which is on our Facebook page. If you are a listener, then please go and I'll pin that as a post on our Facebook page, Engaging IC on Facebook. If you do use Facebook, be great if you could go there and just fill that in for us. It's a very short survey. It just gives us a chance to find out a little bit more about what you're looking for. And also on engagingic.com, our website, there is a form there that you could fill in if you've got any contributions or thoughts, anything that you'd like us to cover in season two. We're all ears, literally, and I don't mean that in a kind of a superficial way. We genuinely do want to hear what you would like us to cover, and I've had some really interesting exchanges with some of our listeners on LinkedIn, and I really appreciate the input that you've given us so far. It's really, really, really helping. So anyway, enough of the future, now to the present. Today we are going to, we've got a great interview coming up for you. I'm not going to kind of spoil that. I'll explain that a little bit in a moment. But next week I've got an interview with Megan Dold, who is the head of internal comms for UK and EMEA at the Financial Times. So an organization I'm sure all of us have heard of, at least, and probably very familiar with. Megan is going to be telling us all about the challenges and joys of communicating to a very diverse audience, but also an audience that is quite demanding. Megan has 600 journalists who are our audience that she communicates with, and as you can imagine, they have specific expectations about the way they're communicated to, given the fact that they are journalists by profession. So Megan's going to be telling us all about how you develop empathy with that audience, with their needs, with their specific issues that they have, given the challenges of their job and also their own professional expectations, and how you can do that effectively in an organization as I'm sure you can imagine, as complex and as wide-reaching as the Financial Times. So that's next week's interview. Very briefly, if you've not already done so, please subscribe to our show. It's a really, really important way that we get ranked and that other people find the show. So if you're not already subscribed, please do so. The advantage of that, obviously, is you get the episode pops up in your player every week automatically, and you don't have to think about it, and that would be great. If you could sign up to our mailing list on our website as well, which is engagingic.com. You can sign up to the mailing list there, and again, we will notify you in advance what's coming up next week, and also we're looking to do some specific mailings about topics that people are interested in to back up what we're covering in the show as well in the future. Facebook group, which is available again via the website. You can find that there. It's a Facebook group. It's by application, but all we ask is that you just tell us which episode that you heard me mention it on, and then we just make sure that we know we're getting genuine listeners signing up to the group. And I think that's it. I'm not going to waffle anymore. I'll get on with today's interview. getting people together to communicate with each other and work together at planned events or at any sort of gatherings within organizations is a really important part of the communications and employee engagement mix that most professionals have. And I think the pandemic of 2020 has really shaken that up and has made us think, well, will we ever have face-to-face events again? Will there ever be a place for having large-scale events? And do we actually need them anymore now that people are working remotely? So this is an area that I wanted to explore. And today's interviewee is a real expert in this area who I thought would be a great person to speak to and to talk us through their thoughts anyway on how the future of events will pan out. Given social distancing, even when that comes to an end, will we need those sorts of events? Will they be still part of our communication and engagement mix? So that's what today's interview is all about, and I hope you really enjoy it. Okay, so today's interviewee is Rob Woodhead, who is the MD at Simply Better. Simply Better, an organization that specializes in bringing people together with the intention of better experiences, better engagement, and better results. Simply Better have been responsible for organising events and experiences for many large organisations, and Rob has been the MD there since 2016. So, hi, Rob, how are you?
Hi, I'm very well, Craig. Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Well, it's a pleasure. And I believe we've just been chatting there before we started recording. You've just moved recently. You're in a new house, about to be refurbished over a long term. And whereabouts exactly are you, Rob?
Absolutely, yeah. We are just out in a little village just outside of Bingley in West Yorkshire. But yeah, absolutely, it's a fixer upper. It's a bit of a renovation project, which is what we've wanted for a while. But yeah, all good and already starting to feel like home, which is always a good thing.
Oh, fantastic, fantastic, excellent. So I introduced a little bit there about Simply Better. It'd be great if you could tell the listeners a little bit more about business and kind of businesses and organisations you're working with at the moment, if that's all right, Rob.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, thanks, Chris. So yeah, very much focused on like we said, the bringing together of people, which in the current environment is a little bit of a challenge at all, but you know, doing that face to face. So we've had to obviously look at our offering and swing that and diversify a little bit. But yeah, very much working with corporate clients quite a lot in the financial sector. About 95% of what we do is internal focused. So, you know, speaking to colleagues and as I say, communicating with them around plans and messages. So we do all sorts of things from conferences, roadshows, reward and recognition as well, but very much focused on as you alluded to then, sort of looking at the experiences that we create, which then in turn create better engagement. And a better love of working for that company, and that in turn obviously then leads to better results. So yeah, that's where we're at.
Excellent, excellent. And I guess that's where we've got a lot of kind of common interest, which is this, you know, that we believe that the human experience is far more powerful when you're with your colleagues, when you're actually physically in the same place. And as you say, we're recording this in the sort of autumn of 2020, which I'm sure anybody who's listened to this sometime in the future will kind of sort of eyes will roll at the mention of 2020. But yeah, we're in a time where face to face is a challenge, and we met via a virtual Institute of Internal Comms event that we hosted up in the Northeast. And I guess you know, let's just talk about that a little bit, Rob, because you know, as businesses that are primarily reliant on human beings being in proximity with each other and not having to communicate through, you know, perspex or wires, you know, how has it affected your business? How have you adapted? And then we'll maybe go on to talk a little bit about how we see, you know, face to face fitting into a communication mix in a post-pandemic environment. So just briefly, I mean, how's it affected your business and how have you kind of pivoted on that?
Yeah, absolutely. No, thank you. Thanks, Greg. Yeah. Well, yeah, obviously it's had a massive effect on what we do. As you say, we are firm believers of the bringing together of people I don't know if you've ever heard of the book called The Power of Moments by two American authors, but a fantastic book about how moments affect our lives and how often those moments happen by chance, but actually we can be the architects of those moments, so we can kind of create those, and there is no better way to do that than a live event. However, as we know, since lockdown began on the 23rd of March and the restrictions were put in place, then you know, that there have been very few and far between. So yeah, exactly right. It's We've had a lot of downtime over the last few months, which in some ways has been actually strangely and kind of controversially maybe quite liberating, because you know, with the lack of live events to put out, we have been able to kind of sit down, we've been able to take a step back, take a deep breath, and I guess really kind of look at our offering and why people work with us. And you know, deeper than delivering an event, you know, what is the result that ultimately people are after? And I think what we did by doing that is we realized that the, as daft as this sounds, that the live event was the culmination of a lot of planning, and a lot of delving under the skin of an organization or of the clients that we're working with to produce something that ultimately is designed, as we said earlier, to create better engagement, to engage people, to get them in the right frame of mind, to change their behavior. And as I said, the final result just tended to happen to be a live event. What we've realized, like I said, is that we can still go through a lot of that process, probably 90% of that process. It's just that the ultimate outcome has to be different. And at the moment, it has to be done in a virtual way. Or you know, now we're looking at more hybrid events where we can have smaller audience numbers. And yeah, like we said, we have all had to learn very quick. We've had to come into this with a very opportunist mindset. You know, like you said, it's dead easy to curl up in a corner and wait for things to change. But I'm always a firm believer that, you know, you go out and search for this stuff and keep your eyes open and opportunities will arise. So yeah, we're starting to see a lot of people now kind of looking at virtual events, hybrid events. Still a few smaller roadshows in the latter quarter of the year with smaller audience numbers, but yeah, very much online and trying to recreate those live experiences in a virtual world.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point you made there. I mean, I think it's something we've done as well, which I think it's very easy. And I've seen a lot of trainers and you know, people in that sort of space just basically transfer to, you know, online, which is fine. And if you're into kind of knowledge transfer and content delivery and that sort of thing, but I think it's slightly more subtle than that, which is, you know, just, I think it's very, very tempting just to go into kind of presentation mode and death by PowerPoint mode. And you see it. I mean, you hear a lot of, you know, talk of Zoom overload and Zoom burnout and Microsoft Teams burnout and people who are just basically being bombarded. And I think in some cases, you know, it has caused people to kind of revert to behave, you know, not behaviors, but ways of delivering content and ways of engaging with people that are quite what transactional. And I think you're absolutely right. And we've done exactly the same, which is, you know, what is it that it would be very difficult for us to recreate online that is really important about the experiences that we create, but then how can we be creative about how we do that in an online environment? So I think it's very similar sort of catharsis that we've been through as well. And what are some of those elements that you've kind of teased out with, you know, without giving away too many trade secrets, which are, you know, absolutely no debates, they're not, you know, they're things that you would never ever sacrifice, but you've seen that you could potentially, you know, bring into a hybrid online event? What are some of those experiential moments that you think are really pivotal in those, you know, in the kind of event space and that kind of one-to-one face-to-face comms space?
It's funny you mentioned that. We refer to it as now Zoom and gloom, because I think like you said, now that burnt out by Zoom calls and our team calls. And again, I think, you know, as a platform, that they're brilliant for what they're designed for, which is, you know, small, sharp, short, sharp webinars and you know, collaborating with smaller groups of people. But I think exactly to your point, what we're seeing now is that people are wanting to connect with wider audiences and you know, bring people together in a deeper, kind of more meaningful way. I think the key point is a lot of people have kind of fallen into the trap of thinking, right, well, we need to do this virtually because we can no longer meet as, you know, in person for a live event. And therefore their immediate thought is, right, okay, well, what platform do we want to use? And there are so many platforms out there to choose from that it's very difficult to kind of see the wood for the trees. Whereas actually what I really think you should be doing is kind of looking, first of all, about, you know, well, what are we actually trying to achieve from this experience? You know, what are the objectives of getting these people together? Not what is the right platform, because that will come as a result of knowing or being very clear on what you're trying to achieve. And we use a really simple kind of acronym called OMG, which is dead easy to remember. So the first bit is objectives. So yeah, what are you trying to achieve? Why are you bringing these people together? The M is then measures. So how will we measure it? How will we know that we've achieved it? And then the results is, the G is gain. So what is the result going to be to the business? You know, once you've got it right, and once we've made sure we've nailed it down. So we always try and tie people back to that acronym, that OMG, objectives, measures, gains. As I said, that then builds the foundation for what you're trying to create for the experience. And it might be that a virtual event is not right for you. You know, it might be that something completely different. But I think virtual and live are two very, very different experiences. So to be able to kind of pick up the agenda from a live event and just apply it virtually is, you know, an absolute nightmare. In fact, I had a friend who was invited by his company, who shall remain nameless. And they said, right, we've got an online event. It's going to happen on this day. You need to be logged on by 9 o'clock. And he logged on at 9 o'clock, and it was 8 hours of pre-recorded video footage with absolutely no interaction, and literally, to your point, death by PowerPoint for the best part of 8 hours. And if you imagine, like we said, around sort of, you know, bringing these people together to try and inspire and engage them, if you can think about where his energy levels were at 9 o'clock versus where his energy levels were at 5 o'clock after 8 hours of pre-recorded video, you know, they'd broken him. He was done for. So, the amount of time it took to probably plan that versus the return that they got was probably not worth it, I would say.
Yeah, I really like your acronym, and I think we have something similar. Probably not set out as an acronym, but you know, very much around objectives. The really being really crystal clear on why this, why now, and why why this type of event, and really asking those questions, because I think you're right. I think people get kind of. We probably end up in similar situations where I've been asked by someone to organise this event, and it's the difficulty sometimes is can you challenge that rationale, and can you push back and actually say, is this the best way to do it? And by doing that, you're helping the client. But I just want to pick up on something you said there, which I think was what I wanted to pick up on next, which is this, that the how long you can keep people's attention for in a virtual environment, because I think I've heard lots of people talk about this, and I think I've got my own particular views on it, which for me, without that multifaceted sort of three-dimensional nature that you get at a proper event, at a physical face-to-face event, where you can have, you know, you can have lots of different experiences, kinesthetic, audio, you know, whereas I think you're a lot more constrained in an online environment. I mean, what's your thoughts on, you know, would you try and run a full whole day virtually, or would you say, let's break it up into some chunks and manage people's energy that way? What are your kind of personal experiences around time and time management when it's in an online environment?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, Craig. It's and we're seeing different clients approach it in different ways. I think personally, my preference would be, you know, we are seeing or what we're advocating is that generally what might ordinarily be a sort of a 1 or 2 day conference, you know, of say 7 hour days, you know, we're advocating that gets split over the course of around about 3 days. With a mixture of live content and then online on-demand content as well, because I think there are so many distractions from home. You know, you hopefully can't hear my barking dog in the background, but she's about to get in the neck when we come off this call. But no, there's, you know, pets and children and home deliveries and whatever else. There are so many distractions. So like you said, to expect people to sit on a laptop for 8 hours staring at a screen is going to absolutely burn them out. If you are, as I said, I alluded to it before, but we're advocating a mixture of kind of live and pre-recorded content. And I think for any live sessions or for any sessions generally, I would kind of almost push people to kind of take that TED Talk principle where you're looking at sort of 15 to 20 to 30 minutes worth of presentations with then a break in between, you know, where people can kind of go and break off and nip to the loo and you know, grab themselves a coffee and then kind of come back for the next session. As I say, I would say per day you'd be looking at maybe up to 2 hours of kind of live content, and then, as I said, a load of kind of pre-recorded on-demand stuff that people can go and view, you know, when the kids are in bed or early morning with a coffee. So they're still getting that content, but they're getting it in their own time. It's kind of, you know, it's on their terms rather than being forced down the neck.
Yeah, yeah. And are you using you know, kind of what I would call breakouts, so you know using the technology to break people into smaller groups for those sorts of discussions? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, we've not pinned our hat, as I said before, to one particular platform, because every event is different. The objectives for every event are different, and therefore the outcome and the platform that you need to use is different. But one that we are using quite a lot and seems to be ticking a lot of the boxes for our clients has got a lot of different functionality. So, you've got gamification on there. You've got the ability to move into breakout rooms and have 10 people on a call kind of for a table discussion. You have got Q&As on there. You've got kind of live polling. You can display it all in screen. As we can in terms of kind of recreating that live event environment, I think is absolutely key, but making sure it's done in a professional way as well. I think what we're tending to find is that the way that people are engaging with their people around large events like this, so the way that business leaders are engaging with colleagues around large events, I think says a lot around the culture of the organization and the importance of their people. I think we've seen it where people have said, do you know what, we'll just do a Zoom call, and they think, right, well, because it's a Zoom call, I only have to send an invite and I'll just kind of jump onto the call 5 minutes before and skim through my notes. Whereas still adding that level of professionalism, still having a studio space where people are presenting from, kind of puts a little bit more pressure on business leaders to kind of invest their time into kind of planning and communicating and making sure it's delivered as it would be for a live event, because there's an investment behind them. And I think that's getting people focused. And I think the scores that we're seeing with from colleagues are people are massively appreciating that and feeling invested in as well. So that's an interesting takeaway we've seen.
I think that's a really important point, which is I think you're right. I think it's a bit like when you have a meeting in your own office and everybody else is coming to you, there's a temptation to be the last one to arrive and the most disorganized, because you're kind of a bit complacent. And I think actually having that pressure to, okay, it's online, but I'm actually going to, really, really go above and beyond to make it, be as professional as possible rather than just winging it, I think is really important. I think it's a really good point. Yeah.
I think that there's a few really interesting approaches to doing that as well. And because a lot of it is around, we've alluded to it in a post I put on LinkedIn the other day, it's a bit like a blockbuster movie. We can provide all of the technical support online and, the effects and whatever else. But if you're, if your lead role either doesn't deliver their lines convincingly, or the story and the plot of the film is pants, then it's going to fail. It's going to be an epic fail. It's so key to get those people focused. And there's a few different ways that we've been doing it. We've been using like a virtual green room, so we can actually have people, all the presenters, gathered backstage. We can communicate with them online whilst they're still watching what's going out live, and that's a great way to get people focused. Or equally, as I said, we have a studio space that we've converted a warehouse in Manchester, or our AV partner has, and that is acting as a really good hub where we can get speakers and event organisers together into one room, and there's a real professional feel about it. There's a big 11-metre LED screen behind them, there's a stage in it, it feels like a live event, and, as a result, you get all those people together, you get that energy, you get that buzz, and that really reflects online, versus having a bit of a pants backdrop behind them like I've got now on the Zoom call.
No, I know you. No, that's brilliant. I think that's really, really good. I really like that idea. I just wanted a couple of areas just to want to sort of explore with you before we wrap. Is this at the beginning of the pandemic, there has a kind of set, not a euphoria, I think that's the wrong word, but there was a kind of a real groundswell of this is it now, we're all going to be kind of cycling to work, we're all going to be kind of, or if or we're all going to be working from home, we're all going to be kind of having this sort of bohemian sort of working patterns, and I think that's great, and I think there was a lot of proclamations that the end of the workplace, you know, we wouldn't need to get back together again. We can do everything through Zoom or whatever. Yeah. I mean, without getting your crystal ball out, Rob, what are your thoughts in terms of how the pandemic and the kind of aftermath is going to affect that? You know, let's assume we get some sort of a vaccine in the future, which means the kind of, you know, the biohazard element of it is taken out of the equation. But in terms of having people in the same workspace, about having people interacting with each other, about the importance of either having people distributed all over the country working from home or in a central place or getting together at least, you know, periodically to communicate. What, I mean, what are your thoughts on how the world is going to look once the kind of dust settles and we're past the immediate sort of shockwaves of this?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. I think we, you know, there's always been, I think, a hesitance by business leaders to have people working from home more than they need to. And I think, you know, it's, I think we've probably been slowly going that way where, you know, flexible working and everything else. And I think this has really just accelerated it at pace and probably taken us forward probably 10 or 20 years from where we might have been, you know, if this hadn't have happened. But I do think that, again, one of the things that we're seeing is that, you know, people are now realizing that actually people can be productive at home. You know, I think a lot of the perception was, well, I'll log on at 9 o'clock and check my emails and then I'll, you know, do a little bit of washing and take the dog for a walk and whatever else. And I think generally, as I say, business leaders maybe thought that people were more likely to maybe not be as focused at working from home. But I actually think, and I don't know if you've seen this as well with your discussions that you've been having, Greg, but productivity is actually far greater because, you know, you can get yourself in there, you can focus. And I think people are probably arguably maybe putting in a few more hours as well, you know, later on in the evening and early morning, just to kind of get things done. There's obviously not the commute now. So, you know, rather than setting off at 7 to work, actually people are sat on their laptops. So, you know, so I think, I actually think the adoption of home working and flexible working is going to increase massively. And whilst productivity will be greater, I think so too will social isolation. So, you know, people working from home means that, you know, you are only connecting to people on the Zoom call. And like you said at the beginning, it was all fantastic. It was great. And we were the same. It was also novel. What we've realized over the last few months is actually there's a real now innate desire for us to get together at least once a week in a socially distanced way in our office and just thrash ideas around and bounce ideas off people. Now, whether that will happen in a workplace, I think ultimately it will. I don't think anyone is ever going to go back to the office, you know, 5 days a week unless they absolutely have to. But I do think then from a live events perspective, then it makes those events even more important. And like you said, you know, bringing together people that ordinarily might be isolated and bringing them into a space, you know, like you said, once the virus is there or once people are comfortable doing that, the need to get people together is even greater. And we are creatures of you know, we are social creatures, aren't we? We crave human interaction, or most of us, maybe not at 6 o'clock in the morning when we're getting up, but we have a tendency to want to interact with other people. And I've been reading quite a lot around the psychology behind this. And I think, yeah, it gives me great confidence that yes, we'll be more productive working from home, but yes, there will be an even bigger need to get together as groups and get people focused and supercharged for the way forward.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think, you know, there's been a lot of, the analogy, I think I mentioned it to you when we spoke before, I think the analogy I've been using is a bit like, you know, you can live on a submarine for a few months, but at some point you're going to need some sunlight and some fresh air.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, initially the initial euphoria, okay, as I said, not necessarily euphoria, a lot of people found it really difficult, but initially, you know, I don't have to travel anymore. I can kind of get up when I want. I can, you know, and I think that I absolutely agree. I mean, I've worked at home for sort of 13, 14 years myself. So I'm a biggest advocate for home working.
Yeah,
But I know from my own personal experience of that, that I have to get together with other people. I have to, you know, even though a lot of my work is with a small team, and we do a lot of that virtually, it's really important, I think, for me to just bounce ideas off people. And I think there's been a lot of talk about, you know, introverts love it and the extroverts miss it, but I think it's deeper than that. I think even in, you know, people who are introverted need you know, maybe not with as many people, but they need contact with fewer people, but you know, more maybe on a more intimate and more deeper kind of conversational level. And I think that's really difficult. And I think, yes, you can do some of that through, you know, weekly Zoom catch-ups, but there is a point at which you just need to sort of sit around the table and have a coffee with each other.
Absolutely.
So I think that's really, you know, a really important point. And I think, you know, going back to your point, I think rather than devaluing the face-to-face event or whatever it is, you know, the getting together, I think it just emphasizes that investment needs to be, that return on that investment needs to be all the better. And going back to your OMG thing earlier,
yeah,
you know, you really need to think through what are those objectives, what are those measures, what are those gains that you need to, you need to get from that event in order to say, right, we aren't going to have as many of these kind of get togethers. We aren't going to be together. So when it happens, let's really make sure it's absolutely, you know, brilliant. And we get a really engaging experience for people that,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
really influences behavior. And so I think you're absolutely spot on with that. Any general, sorry, Rob. Yeah, go on.
No, I was just going to say, Chris, sorry. I think that is the key. I think, you know, the measurement of your, you know, that, like you said, that objective setting at the beginning, so you've got the foundations to work to and constantly, you know, kind of revert back to, and the measurement is absolutely critical. And I think it's certainly something that we don't see as many people doing as we probably feel they should do. But I do think that now, and especially, you know, with all the rumors of well, not the not rumors either, but the recession kind of looming and whatever else, you know, spend is going to have to be absolutely justified. And I think therefore to be able to have some very kind of clear measurement metrics in place to be able to show, as I said, stakeholders and budget holders that the benefit of bringing these people together is absolutely critical. And you know, our belief is that events will only truly add value, you know, whether these are live events or virtual events, they will only truly add value to a stakeholder if they can change people's behavior. And therefore, yeah, you know, that is the key thing to demonstrate, you know, what are people doing differently after this event as a result of the event. And, you know, as I say, whether that's virtual or live, those principles should always be adhered to, I think.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. No, I think that's fantastic. So any final sort of thoughts and you know, just in terms, I think we, you know, we've talked about some really interesting things. I think that the whole, I'm going to look up your book, A Power of Moments, as well, and I'll put a link.
Yeah, highly recommend that book. Yeah, absolutely, yeah, it's brilliant. Yeah. Absolutely brilliant book. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, sounds really good. And then just for listeners for this as well, we've got an interview in episode, I think it's episode 15 with Tracy Brower, who again talks a lot about this kind of psychology of isolation and the importance of the workplace. She's looking at it more from a kind of workplace perspective, but I think again a lot of what we just talked about there, Rob, sort of ties in with what we talked about in that interview there. And I think no, some really, really good takeaways there. And I think your OMG acronym, I think a few people will be scribbling that down in the show notes. But you know, I think that applies to it applies to any intervention. I think, you know, that whole, you know, kind of psychology, I think, is really important.
Well, I must credit Andy Bounds for that one, who is a speaker that we've worked with on a regular basis, and OMG is his. I can't profess that's ours, but yeah, Andy Bounds, who is an author and is fantastic as well, so has also done some great
work. Yeah, as Justin is Tompy, as you say, steal with pride, and you know, always give your sources, don't be worried about you know, using a good idea that someone else has come up with. As long as you credit it, then that's fine. Excellent. Okay, so Rob, I forewarned you of this, as I do with all of my interviewees. Where I always ask the interviewees at the end of the interview something that even people who kind of know them quite well and kind of maybe work with them for a few years or known them for a few years don't know about you. So what's a sort of a guilty secret or a little bit of a secret that not a lot of people know about Rob Woodhead? Come on.
Yeah, this is interesting. So I've been racking my brains for this and put some bold lines through some of them that I thought, actually, I won't let that one out. But I think so. I am actually a qualified cartoonist and illustrator. I studied art at college and then was going to go on to university to study illustration, but took a different path and went down a sports route while I was playing rugby over in Leeds. But I haven't picked up a pen for years since the kids were born. And again, one of the positive things to come out of lockdown and COVID is that I vowed to myself that I would start drawing again, and so I've just finished a little pen drawing of my my daughter and our dog, which is going to take pride of place on her wall, she says. So I need to get that frame for her. But,
fantastic.
It's nice to be back drawing again.
Yeah. Well, if you ever need any work, you know, we're illustrators is what we kind of we're a big key part of what we do. But no, that's fantastic. My daughter's got her A level results, thankfully. But she did A level art, and she's a fantastic illustrator as well. And she does a lot of on iPad with a pen, you know, the Apple pencil thing. And it's amazing what she. I just don't know how she does it. It just blows me away. I'm massively incapable of drawing myself, but I love you know, it's a key part of what we do. So I love working with people who are talented in that way. So it's a fantastic skill. So that's brilliant, Rob. I don't know whether whether I was going to ask you actually, where can we find out more about Simply Better? So I was going to put a link to your LinkedIn profile and a link to your website. Anything else that you'd like to? I was going to say maybe a link to one of your illustrations. getting back in the game, or
I'm keeping those quiet at the moment. I need to brush up on my skills. I say I'm a little bit rusty after 11 years without a pen in hand. Feel free. I'm kind of regular posting on LinkedIn, and I think the other social channels for Simply Better, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn, and Facebook. Our website, as with most people's, needs a little bit of work, so we'll be going to a holding page fairly soon as part of our rebrand and proposition before we launch that. But probably social channels are the best place to find out about what.
Okay, all right. Well, we'll put a link into your Twitter and your Instagram and what did you say? And LinkedIn and
LinkedIn and Facebook as well. Yeah, just the four, okay. the four biggies well. Really. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, that's brilliant. And I guess you'd be happy if anyone wants to reach out to you, talk to you about, anything, if they're planning an event or just want to pick your brains on it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm more than happy to kind of share any sort of thoughts or advice, no strings attached, just feel free to give me a ring or drop me a message on LinkedIn. I'll be more than happy to chat anything through with people. So yeah, by all means, if people just want some help and advice, then we are here for you, by all means.
Fantastic. Well, that's been superb, Rob. Thank you very much. Really appreciate your time, and good luck with your renovation of your new house. Hope it all goes well.
Thank you, Craig. Yeah, I'm about to rip some panelling off a wall after this, I think. So yeah, we'll I'll put the crowbar down.
We'll let you get on with it. Thanks a lot, Rob. All the best.
Thanks very much. Cheers. Bye.
Thank you.
So thank you for listening to Engaging Internal Comms. We hope you've enjoyed this episode. We'd love to hear your thoughts about the show and any questions, ideas, or feedback that you'd have, anything you'd like us to cover on future episodes too, please. So you can email us at info@thebigpicturepeople.co.uk, or you can get in touch with us via the contact form at engagingic.com. You can also sign up to our mailing list there, and we'll send you relevant news about the show and anything that we think you might be interested in when it comes to internal communications and employee engagement. If you like the show and you haven't already done so, please subscribe to it directly via your podcast service. And you can also subscribe via the links on our podcast page, which again is engagingic.com. If you like the show, we'd be really grateful if you could leave us a review, and also if you could leave some verbal feedback there as well, not just stars. That's always nice to know that we've been appreciated, and particularly how we've helped you. If you know anyone else who might like the show or might benefit from it, please tell them, please share it with them, please share the link to our website, engagingic.com. And that will be great, because we want to grow our community. We want to get as many people involved in the show as possible. And the bigger, the better. Okay, thank you.